just go solo.
This is Solo Travel Talk. Your solo travel advisor is Astrid Clements.
Welcome to Solo Travel Talk with Astrid. And the topic today is Astrid's solo travel secret weapon.
And my name is Catherine O'Brien. I am Astrid's producer. Astrid, I know that you have a secret tool that you like to use for your planning when you're going on a trip. What is this secret tool and how did you start using it for your travel planning?
Well, I have to confess, it's not a secret, but this tool I feel like is underutilized, and it's something that I kind of stumbled upon. I will reveal it now. It is YouTube videos. And for those of you who don't really know what YouTube videos are about, because I know a lot of the younger people use YouTube videos to look at a lot of different things that they're interested in. But some of the older people who are on the internet really don't even know that there's a YouTube channel. They don't know that they can use it. So I'm going to just give a little background for those of you who've never used it before so you'll understand what it is. But basically, YouTube is a video hosting sharing site, which is now a part of Google. And this particular site started in 2005. And what you'll find are individually generated and corporate or institutional generated videos. Most of the videos that you'll see are individual. And these videos, in my opinion, can be very valuable because with the corporate or institutional videos, sometimes it's really just advertising. So with the videos, you can see the comments, of which I read. You can see if people have shared them. You can see whether people thought that they were good, giving them a thumbs up or a thumbs down. And really, I've read some stuff about YouTube and just the value of it. And in one particular article touted it as the newest and biggest learning cycle in human history. So people are using this particular type of technology more and more because people are becoming more and more visual, or visual or hearing versus reading. It just seems to be quicker. It gives you a better idea than reading something. So YouTube videos have really taken off. So you basically use it just like if you were Googling a topic. Say you want to find out what the top 10 hotels are in, say, Santa Fe. So you just put, you would Google YouTube top 10 hotels in Santa Fe. You'll be surprised how many hotel videos will come up. And they'll either be individual videos that are, have been shot by people who've stayed there, or bloggers. There'll be videos that are done by the hotel itself, showing off all of the amenities, the property, etc. So anything you want to Google, and wow, you'll be surprised how many videos come up. Okay, you asked me the question, when did I first start using YouTube videos? And I kind of stumbled into this. This the first time I used it was in 2011 when I was planning my trip to Russia. And I had never been to Russia before. I'd always wanted to go, but I was hesitant because of safety and not being able to speak the language, understand it, or read it. But in 2011, I had made the decision to go, and I was going solo. I contracted with a very good company out of Washington, D.C. to put the trip together. Well, I wanted to basically tell them the two hotels. I was actually going to be in Moscow and in St. Petersburg. I wanted to select the hotels. So as usual, I went to my favorite sites I Googled it. I got three hotels in Moscow that looked interesting to me. One was the hotel, and I'll pronounce it National, but it's a Hotel National, but I don't think that's really how you should say it. I don't know how you say it in Russian. That hotel, the Ritz-Carlton, and the Metropole. And I narrowed it down to the Ritz-Carlton and the Hotel National because they were very close to Red Square. Actually, the Hotel National was right across the street. So I read everything about the two, and I noticed that there were YouTube videos on both of the hotels. And this was really the first time I had seen a YouTube video when I had just Googled basic information. So I clicked on the one for the Hotel National, and I saw how gorgeous this hotel was. First and foremost, it was a historic hotel. It was opened in 1902. It had been very well maintained. The architecture and the interior design was basically, I'd say, Art Deco with kind of a Russian twist. It had beautiful original oil paintings throughout the hotel and in your rooms. The rooms were wonderful. Each room had a small foyer, your own sitting room, and then a separate bedroom. A beautiful marble, even though it was small, a very well-appointed bathroom. The room itself had beautiful light fixtures, antique furniture. The hotel had a very elegant restaurant that you took your breakfast in, as well as you could eat at night. It overlooked Red Square. And it also had a real nice bar or lounge that had a gorgeous atrium in it. And, you know, you could see the stars at night. So I thought, this is a beautiful hotel. Well, I YouTubed the Ritz-Carlton. Brand new hotel, beautiful, modern. Did have kind of a Russian feel to it also. The room did not have a separate sitting area. It was a typical Ritz-Carlton room, just, you know, a room with a desk and, you know, either a chaise lounge or two chairs. Very beautiful, very nice bathroom. Their bar was on the rooftop, and it was touted as the favorite bar in Moscow at the time. But I really loved what I saw with the Hotel National because it had a real Russian feel. It had the history there, and it was only $200 a night, and the Ritz-Carlton was $400 a night. They were both owned by international chains, so I booked the Hotel National, and it was fabulous. It was even better than the YouTube video. So this was actually the first time I used YouTube videos. I started after that when I would plan my trips to always do my typical Googling, and then I would look for the YouTube videos on certain topics. But now, in the last 2 years, I actually start with the YouTube videos.
Oh, wow.
Yes. If I'm thinking about, say, going to Venice, I just got back from Venice. I was there 10 days on a beautiful trip to Venice last month. Before I decided to go, I've been there twice, but I wanted to really dig deep this time because the other two times I had only stayed 2 or 3 days. So I did a lot of YouTube Googling videos about Venice. And it's just fabulous because you can use these videos to then drill down and get more specific in terms of more information, etc. So I use now, or I go to the YouTube videos first.
I love this topic because I don't think that most people would think to do that.
No. And it, you know, this is kind of a new phenomenon, all of these videos. I stumbled upon it, and now I use it extensively.
How much time before you travel do you devote to watching these videos?
I would say 40% of the time that I spend on the research, or what I call the pre-trip research to decide what I want to do, if I actually want to go, watching YouTube videos. Because I'll first of all, I look at everything, like cool, I'll put in YouTube, cool things to do in New York City, or YouTube, the history of Venice. Mm. Best restaurants in Austin, Texas. Just where, oh, another one. I love this one. Where to shop and what to buy, say, in Marrakesh. And you will be surprised. You will get lots and lots of videos. And they're great because when you watch them, you really get a sense of what's cool or what you should buy. I also even Google YouTube cultural do's and don'ts, which is very important. I will YouTube what museums are important that you shouldn't miss. So, you know, I spend a lot of time with the YouTube videos because that helps me first and foremost to decide whether I want to do something, see something. It helps me decide where I want to stay, what I want to eat, where I want to eat. So I love it. And when you see something, I really do think you understand it better. And a lot of times, I think it's better to see it than to read about it first, because you don't waste time reading. And then if you see it, you go, oh, no, I don't think I don't think I'm interested in that. So I spent a lot of time.
You mentioned the thumbs up and the thumbs down and the sharing. How do we know that we're getting good or the best videos for what we're trying to accomplish?
Okay, well, there's a wide spectrum, I guess I should say, on quality of the videos. And it ranges from great to really bad. And you will know if you watch enough of them, you know, you'll click off the ones that, you know, they instantly kind of turn you off typically, and or you don't have a good feel of the person who, what they're saying, or
who made it.
Yeah. Or the quality of the visuals, etc. So you get used to that. And like you'll see their videos by Expedia, Rick Steves, bloggers, you know, major tourist type of organizations, individuals. You'll see all types. So, and you'll be surprised. Some of the individual videos are very inspiring. So, you know, you'll have your own meter, but then also on the videos, you'll see how many people have shared it. You'll see how many comments. I always read the comments. You'll see who's given it how many thumbs up and thumbs down.
Yeah.
So, you know, the more you watch them, you'll get used to what you feel like.
You kind of get a little bit of a sense of what is a quality video. And like you said, they're not always the commercially produced ones. That there's plenty of people who are just avid travelers who are going to make these good videos.
Yeah, yeah. And there, some of them are very funny or very entertaining, and some are very informative, and the quality of the video is beautiful. I mean, now with a smartphone, oh, you can shoot some great video if you know what you're doing.
Well, I know we have some really good specific examples that our listeners can use to try and start using YouTube as their travel planning tour. So let's kick it off. Let's talk about sites. Astrid, tell us a little bit about how you use YouTube videos for the sites that you're going to see in a place you're visiting.
Okay, well, let's go back and I'll use my trip to Russia again, because that particular trip was kind of like a milestone in my solo travel. I had to put together the itinerary for this company who was organizing it and getting me a private guide and a private driver throughout the whole trip. So I started with top 10 sites in Moscow and YouTube cool things to do in Moscow. Well, all kinds of different videos came up, and they were beautiful, highlighting the Kremlin, Red Square, Sparrow Hill, which I didn't know what that was, Moscow City, Christ the Savior Cathedral. There's an area called the Seven Sisters that has some Stalinist type of architecture that is a very nice area of town. So I got a feel for the different historic, modern, and not quite as modern, but I'd say after World War II, some of the things that were important to see in Moscow. So that helped me just in a broad sense. Then each particular thing I wanted to see, I YouTube the Kremlin. So I watch videos on the Kremlin. And the Kremlin is big. It has a lot of different buildings and things. So you got to see the grounds, the interiors. And that's wonderful because you can decide whether you really want to take the time to go see something. So that's basically how I use it for sites. You know, I decide and I just type in cool things to do in wherever I'm going, or top 10 sites or things not to miss when going to New Orleans or whatever.
So, and that's the kind of the keywords you use, is like cool or top best or top 10, those kinds of things.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, Google is so smart that, it kind of knows what you're trying to ask.
Even if I'm struggling, it knows what I'm looking for.
Yes.
Okay, this next one, I still can't believe people put up videos about restaurants, but do people really put up these videos about the restaurants that are on your potential dining list?
Well, let me tell you, here again, maybe not before 2010, 2011, but since then, with the foodie craze, celebrity chefs, all these new types of cuisine, fusions of different cultural foods together to create whole new types of modern cuisines. There are a lot of YouTube videos now focusing on how you prepare things, the cool restaurants, just the food that you should eat when you go here or there. So there's a lot. And here again, I'm going to cite, a couple examples in this particular category. And I'll fall back on my Moscow trip again, because here I couldn't read the language. So I knew if I asked my guide to take me to a restaurant, she could interpret something on the menu. But I really wanted to be able to read the menu, or I wanted to go somewhere that I knew I shouldn't miss. Russia doesn't have quite as many YouTube videos as, say, a Western European country would, or obviously American or an English-speaking country. But there's enough there to where you can find out what you're looking for. So I put in top 10 restaurants in Moscow. One of the restaurants I saw was called Cafe Pushkin, and this was a gorgeous restaurant that was very popular before the revolution, and it is to this day very popular, very elegant, very posh. So I thought, oh, I have to go to Cafe Pushkin and have tea and just take in the ambiance of it all. And it was beautiful. So, I used it to decide where I wanted to eat, or the types of food that I wanted to eat in Moscow. Now, in preparing for this little podcast, I did some more current YouTubing for what to eat and where to what the top restaurants are. And there was a real good one put out by Moscow Out. And they focused on a new diner called the Beverly Hills Diner. And that is supposed to be really popular right now. And it's kind of like 50s, 60s American food, and it's a hit. Also, a Turandot, which is actually the best restaurant in Moscow, the most expensive, or I don't know if it's exactly the most expensive, but it's the most highly acclaimed. Gorgeous interiors. It's known for its afternoon tea, its buffets, it has live music. So if you want to go to, if not the best restaurant in the top two or three, go to Turandot. So that you get to see that in the video. There was also one called, I think, 8 Things to Eat When You Go to Russia. You should watch that. They go into the blinis and the, you know, the caviar and the borscht. I never thought I would like beet soup. But they're all different kinds of borscht. I mean, they use different spices. Some of the borscht are actually very good. And I kind of acquired a taste for it. But so you'll find out what to eat, where to go. One other one that I Googled here recently about Moscow, I like to also YouTube solo-friendly restaurants or best restaurants for the solo diner, because I know that I'm going to be eating by myself. And this is a trend now. There are more and more restaurants that cater to solo diners as well as groups or couples, etc. And they'll have seating that is good for a solo diner, whether it's around, say, an open kitchen chef preparing, or you've got communal tables or banquets with little small couple types of tables and seating, which is typically very good. But I Googled that, and this guy called, or he was called the Real Russian. And one of his best recommendations for new restaurants was Pretty Betty. And Pretty Betty is also a diner. And it's, you know, very popular with the local Russians in Moscow. But his claim, or is at the end of his video, he says, "No fake information." So he was very proud of the facts he was giving you, and I found him entertaining as well as substantive. So last on this particular topic, I have recently been YouTubing food tours. This is something that I have started to do everywhere I go. I try to take a food tour. This is a new kind of movement. They're doing them, you know, in many different places all over the world. And on my recent trip where I went around the world, 50 days solo, I wanted to take food tours. So I Google food tour in Marrakesh. Fabulous. You get to see basically the types of ethnic foods you'll be eating. They go into a little bit about the local restaurants they'll be taking you to, where the locals go, not where the tourists go. And you'll get a general idea of what you will experience on the tour, because typically these food tours go into some cultural things, some historical things, and how it relates to why the people eat what they eat and the type of cuisine that has evolved there. So I have been using the YouTubes now to look at the different food tours that are offered where I'm going, and it's been very good. It's helped me decide which company I want to go with on the particular food tour.
You just gave a little bonus tip about food tours. That would be so fun, especially for a solo traveler.
Oh yeah, food tours are great.
Wow.
Because first of all, the food is great. I mean, I've never had a bad food tour ever. Then you meet a lot of other people who are interested in food. Typically, those types of people enjoy having a good time, while they're eating. And it's just it's a real good way to understand a place that you are at a deeper level. And I enjoy that more. I mean, I like to go to the restaurants and eat different things and decide whether I really like them. But when you get more information about it and you go in the kitchens and you watch these people, you know, cook couscous or whatever, it makes the couscous taste even better. So I like using them now to decide what food tours that I'll take.
That's great. Let's switch gears here. I know you love to shop. Can YouTube help you with shopping?
Oh, my God. Now, this is going to be the longest section of the podcast because I have to confess, I am a hopeless shopaholic. I love to shop. And wherever I go, I am looking for interesting shops, whether it's crafts. I like to go to high-end boutiques or new designer or real creative boutiques or stores, whether it's jewelry or whatever. I even like to do vintage shopping in flea markets. So shopping is a sport to me. So I use YouTube a lot because, you know, you have to basically decide how much time you want to spend shopping, and this can lead you in the right direction. So I'll give you just a couple of ideas on how I've used it around the world and how I use it in the United States, etc. But I remember when I went to China the first time, which was in 2012, I Googled where to shop in Beijing or shopping in Beijing. Well, it tells you about a particular street and some different malls that they have and, you know, where to find. Well, they have lots of knockoffs, so you get it. They'll tell you where to go get the knockoffs and this type of thing. But there was one video that talked about the flea market, and that Beijing had the largest flea market in the world. So I watched several of those videos, and I tell you, it was mind-boggling. They had all kinds of merchandise there from different ethnic groups from all over China. Some of it, you know, I wouldn't be interested in, but there were a lot of things that I thought, ooh, I want to go to this flea market, if nothing else, to just experience it. So when I was in Beijing, I got a guide and driver. I arranged it through the concierge at my hotel and spent a delightful day at the Beijing flea market. Now, I could not have navigated around that. I couldn't have gotten there. I wouldn't have taken a taxi in China because I don't speak Chinese. So getting the driver and the guide was imperative. But we spent a delightful day at the flea market. She negotiated everything that I wanted to buy. She didn't let me look at anything that she felt like was not quality. And it was very interesting. And if I wouldn't have watched that video, I wouldn't have understood what this flea market was all about. Another YouTube video or subject that I think is very good that deals with shopping in the world is Istanbul. Istanbul has a grand bazaar that is a must-do. It is over 1,000 years old. There are so many shops in there that it is hard to really believe once you get into the Grand Bazaar. But you should watch the YouTube videos. You should know what it looks like, what it feels like, what are the different types of things that you will find there. Those videos are great about the Grand Bazaar. Also, London. London has a weekend Well, it's called a flea market, but it's not so flea market. I think it's more pop-ups, and it's got a lot of vendors that have their own little shops, etc. I bought beautiful jewelry there, everything. It's not like your real flea market, but it's on Portobello Road. And it is a great thing to do on a Saturday. If you're going to London, I suggest you look at these YouTube videos on the Portobello Market. And I guarantee you, if you like to shop, you're going to have a great time on Portobello Road. I've been there several times. In fact, the last time I was there, well, before that, I had bought a couple of things from a lady, or a couple of pins. She was selling costume jewelry, but it was more of like antique costume jewelry. So I bought four or five pins. They were, pins that you wear
brooches
on.
Brooches kind of thing.
Yeah, brooches, excuse me. They were very well priced. It was at the end of the day that I got her, and so she hadn't sold as many, so it was a good transaction. Well, the last time I went, I got there again late at the day, and I walked up and she said, "Where have you been? You haven't been here in a while." And I said, What do you mean? I said, "Do you know who I am? Do you remember me?" She said, "You're the one who bought all those pins several years ago." So I thought that was kind of endearing. Yeah. And Portobello Road is just a real fun Saturday. But I didn't learn about that until I YouTubed and I Googled, and I saw how interesting it was with the antiques and the different vendors and just the whole feel of it.
That one kind of strikes me as one that might not make it into a guidebook, but it would. After seeing the video, it kind of helped you make that jump, like, oh, this is something I gotta go to.
Yes. In fact, every time I go to London, I always make sure I'm there on Saturday so I can scoot down there. But unfortunately, I haven't been there for, 10 years now. But
I bet she'll still remember you. She'll.
I don't know. Okay. Well, I just recently went to New York. And so before I went to New York, I haven't been there in a couple of years, I wanted to see what was hot with the shop. You know, I don't know if everybody will agree with me, but I think New York City is the best place in the world to shop. It has so many different types of vendors and stores and price points. I mean, it is totally, unbelievably fantastic. So I Googled best places to shop in New York. Got a great YouTube video that was broken down or organized by neighborhoods. And that is great because New York, Manhattan is spread out. So, you know, you want to know what is cool in a particular area. So this talks about Midtown, where you have really your upper-end shopping, your very expensive department stores like Bergdorf's and Henry Bendel, Saks. Then it tells you about Soho. They're more contemporary types of boutiques and stores, department stores, H&M. There's also Brooklyn, which is real hot right now for vintage and thrift shopping. And I'm telling you, that is a craze. Everywhere I go, I see so many more vintage shops. Before it was just kind of like resale, but now it's really on a higher level. They're very a lot of them are very discerning. So if you like that kind of shopping, Brooklyn is great. Last, the financial district that's actually where I was this on my last trip, and the shopping there was great, and it was within basically a block. I was staying at the Hilton Millennium right across the street from the 9/11 and the World Trade Center, all the new development. Walk out the door to the left is Century 21, which is the original discount department store for high-end brands at very wonderful prices. And I'll have to admit, I did some damage there. but it was really worth it. Then right across the street from the hotel was the brand new what's called the oculus. Mm-hmm. And this is a sculpture-like modern structure that is like Grand Central Station. It has subway stops in there, train comes in there. What I would call mid-level to somewhat high-end stores, restaurants, it's not quite finished yet. But the architecture of this, I can't even describe it. You have to see it. It is, it's just, it's a piece of sculpture. It's all white. It's just magnificent. I mean, it is something to see. So that's great shopping there. Then you continue through, you go past the 9/11 Memorial, the World Trade Center 1 building with the observation tower, and you cross the street, and then there is a brand new development called Brookfield, and they have the most wonderful new high-end mall with Gucci, Hermes, Valentino, Chanel, fabulous restaurant, very upscale, high-end food court. You can sit outside and watch the yachts and the boats on the Hudson River, of which I did. I had breakfast there, and I just sat outside, and it was beautiful. So that financial district, because of all the new construction, which some of it was because of 9/11, and some of it was just that's where a lot of the new buildings are. So there's new shopping there. It's fabulous. More tips on shopping in New York. If you like sneakers, oh my gosh, they have so many YouTube videos on where to shop for sneakers. Best Adidas store, you know, in New York. Oh, all kinds of stuff. It's great. Then if you like your what I call bizarre shopping or kind of like bargaining shopping, Chinatown. There's a great there's some great YouTube videos on Canal Street, what Chinatown is like. And, you know, it tells you bring cash because they don't like credit cards. It tells you about how to spot a knockoff and how to avoid it, just what to expect, do bargain. And when I was here the last time, I did make it to Chinatown because I had eaten at a place called Vandals, which is a very hip place to eat. But I was walking back to the hotel and went through Chinatown. Well, it was kind of cold, so I decided to buy a scarf. So I saw this one real colorful scarf, and I went up to the vendor, and I said, well, how much? And he said, $15. And I said, $15? I said, you know, what about $10? And so he looked at me, he says, okay, $10. So I bought this, what I thought was a very pretty, colorful scarf. And so I wore it on the trip because it was kind of windy. Then the last day when I was in Brookfield, I decided to go into some of the high-end stores. And I'll just tell you a little story. I walked into Gucci, and I was looking around, and the one of the sales attendant came up and said, that scarf is gorgeous. Where'd you get it? I said, well, you know, thank you very much. I didn't have the heart to tell him. I bought it on Canal Street.
Here you're on the fanciest shop you can find. And
I know. But Canal Street, you can find some things that really are, you know, you're not ashamed to wear them. That's what I'm trying to say. They might not be obviously the finest quality, but they can look pretty good. I use it to help me decide really where I want to shop, what I want to buy. Like when I went to Venice, I YouTubed what to buy when visiting Venice or where to shop. And it came up with a lot of good things. Like it went into the mask and the Murano glass, the jewelry, and the also jewelry made from Murano glass, the linens, the tapestries, purses, leather goods. So you get a good idea of what their what you will see there that you know you can buy and decide whether you want it, because you know you can go to somewhere and you just don't like the way the design elements of how they you know make things, so you don't want to waste your time if you know you don't like it. So the YouTube videos will help you this way.
You and I live in an area that festivals are a big part of our life down here where we live. I know that some people are traveling specifically for special events. They're going to a special event. How can YouTube help us there?
Well, you are right on track of what I was going to use as my example for how I would use it for festivals. Because I'm from Louisiana, I'm going to focus on Mardi Gras, which is the biggest party in the world. If you are interested in coming to Mardi Gras, there are some fabulous videos that focus on Mardi Gras. One in particular, National Geographic has a great documentary about Mardi Gras. It gives you some history, the culture around it, shows you costumes, goes into the different crews, gives you some visuals for some of the parades. There's a museum in Jackson Square that has a lot of memorabilia, talks about the music, you know, the kinds of music that you'll experience, the musicians, etc. So it gives you a good overview. There are also some great videos on the different parades. There are many, many parades during Mardi Gras. They have different themes. Rex is your most opulent and majestic parade. It's always on Fat Tuesday on Mardi Gras itself. And, that's a one you don't want to miss. Zulu is also equally fabulous. It's very exotic. The music is fabulous. They throw coconuts, and the coconuts are very valuable. People are always wanting to get a coconut, so that's a fun parade. There's a parade around shoes, and they throw shoe doubloons with shoes on them, shoe trinkets, real shoes, everything. So if you love shoes. There's even a parade for shoes, and it'll go into the nighttime parades. Bacchus is really beautiful, and Demian. They'll have, like, movie stars will be either the king or queen. So by watching the videos, you can even see what parades that you want to key in on, because there's so many things going on, whether it's a ball or parade or a street party or whatever, or just people watching. Oh, my gosh, if you like people watching, come to Mardi Gras. It is something else. So that's how I would use it. And it could be any festival, whether, you know, it's an art, you know, Art Basel or whatever.
So we can just expect that there's going to be some type of video that goes along with something we're thinking about going to.
Oh, yeah. And there will be, like I said, probably tourist bureaus will make the videos. There'll be documentaries. National Geographic, I think they're fabulous. Everything National Geographic does is such high quality. So whenever you see one of those, click on that and really pay attention.
I'm thinking that with the events, you're probably going to get even a greater range, kind of like you were describing before, from the tourist board to the Nat Geo to the vloggers, people who are doing it on their own.
Yeah, and then just individuals who were there.
Yeah,
having a good time, and Right. They're trying to say, oh my gosh, don't miss this. You know, this happened, and you know, this is where it's at, and that kind of thing. So it's a great tool to decide whether you want to go to the festival, and then if you do, what you want to do. You know, when you watch all these different videos, you get a good feel for a lot of different things. I mean, first of all, you get an idea of the way the place looks like, what the architecture is like. Is there a lot of traffic on the streets? Or, you know, like in Venice, there are no cars. So you really get an idea of a place that has no cars. You see how the people dress. You see what they look like, you know, because people from different ethnic groups and countries do look different, you know. So you get used to looking at, you know, the way the population looks. You'll have an idea of the environs around your hotel, what your hotel looks like, the main sites. And then also something that you probably wouldn't even think about is you, by watching these videos, you'll also hear the sounds. Church bells in Venice, call to prayer in Marrakesh, all the traffic in Moscow, which is unbelievable, and in the unusual Oriental music sounds of like what you hear in China. So by just hearing this and watching these videos, it gives you a real familiarity of the place before you go there. And I can tell you, I know many times when I'm riding from the airport to my hotel and I start to approach the city and I go, and I say, oh yeah, that's that tower. And I saw that in this other video. So you kind of get your bearings. And I like to try to study my maps too before I go. And I'm very careful in where I pick my hotels, because I typically like to stay where I'm going to be doing a lot of different things. So if I watch the videos that are in this neighborhood or area, when I get there, I've already seen these buildings. And so it's not so much of a shock. I don't feel as like, oh, you know, like I'm just... It's not as much of a shock. And what I consider this, it just kind of helps you get a pre-trip consciousness. And I'm going to do a couple of podcasts on this topic, but culture shock when you travel is a big thing. And so by watching these videos, you kind of already have experienced, you know, what you're going to see and hear and eat. By seeing it, it helps you. It's
like the mindset.
Yes, it does help you get into the way the place is. I guess you would say, yeah, the mindset, basically. But here again, I can't stress it enough. I do think in some ways it does relieve some of the fears and the stress of the unknowns. It does give you a good familiarity. And just that familiarity is a stress reducer. It's a good thing. Okay, well, I'll wrap this podcast up by saying, yes, I really do think that YouTube videos are one of the great research and decision-making tools that someone can use to create a great and wonderful solo travel trip and experience. I highly recommend you use what we've touted as Astrid's solo travel secret weapon, YouTube videos.
Listeners, why don't you take a moment and go to social media and let Astrid know some of the YouTube videos you are going to be using to plan your next solo adventure. We really hope you enjoyed the show and really got a new perspective on how to use YouTube for solo travel planning. Did you know that packing is one of the top concerns that Astrid hears about from people about to go on a solo adventure? That's why Astrid has an amazing packing list to help you get past that and enjoy your trip. Just go to her website, astridtravel.com. Right there on the front page is a place you can get her packing list to really take the stress out of that part of your trip. You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, and really find it all of the finer places that podcasts can be found. Give us a rating. We'd love to hear your feedback. Thank you so much for listening, and we look forward to seeing you next week on Solo Travel Talk.
Thank you for listening to Solo Travel Talk. Follow Astrid on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. To learn more about Astrid or her solo travel advisors, visit her website, astridtravel.com.